This is Sheila Hamill and Andrew Ridgwick with New Day Dawning. Welcome to the programme and thank you for joining us on Hospital Radio for Northumberland and North Tyneside.
I'm getting ready for a new day dawning. I'm getting ready for a brand new morning. Packing my bags for a heavenly journey. I can't wait to be there. No, I can't wait to be there.
This coming Wednesday, the 27th of January, is Holocaust Memorial Day, a day which marks the liberation of Auschwitz-Birkenau, the largest Nazi death camp of World War II. On this day, we'll be remembering not only the 6 million Jews murdered in the Holocaust and the millions of people killed under Nazi persecution, but also those murdered in the genocides which followed in Cambodia, Rwanda, Bosnia and Darfur. And so in two special New Day Dawning programmes, this Sunday and the next, I'm taking this opportunity to reflect upon one person's life which was changed beyond recognition in the year 1938, just before the outbreak of war. The story you'll be hearing is about a young girl of 12 called Gabrielle, who with the help of her grandmother escaped Nazi persecution on what was known then as the Kindertransport, the children's transport. Now, Kindertransport was the name given to a series of rescue efforts which brought approximately 10,000 unaccompanied refugee Jewish children to Great Britain from Nazi Germany and its annexed territories between 1938 and 1940. Many of these children never saw their parents again, as their families were later deported to the East and murdered. Gabrielle is now known as Gay Keenigan, and she's a fascinating lady to listen to, a retired headmistress who lives here in the northeast of England, and I know you'll find her story both heartrending and uplifting. Let's hope that her memories and those told by other survivors this coming week will challenge prejudice, discrimination, and hatred in our society today. So I'm going to begin our programme today with a song which is dear to Gay's heart, a folk song, which is called My Mutter War a Wienerin. She didn't think I'd find a copy of this song, but I did. And here it is, sung by Eric Kunz. Translated, it means, my mother was a Viennese.
Es ist mir heut noch in Erinnerung, als ob's gestern gewesen wär. Es war ein schöner Sonntagsmorgen, da ruft's Mütterl geschwind umher. Lass dir's Gesicht und Tanterl waschen, lass die Wuckerl dir frisieren. Heut will ich zum ersten Mal auf'n kahlen Berg nauf. Oben hat's mir zeigt die Pracht, hat mich gestreichelt und hat gelacht, hat gesagt, schau, der Stephansdom und der blaue Donaustrom und das Häusermeer da drin, es ist deine Heimatstadt, dein Wien. Bleib stets treu dem schönen Ort, ich hab gehalten mein Ort. Meine Mutter war a Wernerin, drum hab ich Wern so gern. Sie war's, die mein Leben mir die Liebe hat hin zu meinem einzigen goldenen Wehr. Mein Mutter war a Wernerin, drum hab ich Wern so gern. Sie war's, die mein Leben mir die Liebe hat hin zu mein einzigen goldenen Bär.
Good morning, Gay.
Good morning, Sheila.
Thank you so much for your willingness to share your story with us this morning. Can you tell us first what life was like in Austria as Hitler rose to power? And when did your family realise that you were in danger?
I was just a child, but what I remember very vividly was the day that the soldiers came marching into Vienna. And I remember that people were lining the streets and waving flags and clapping and cheering. And it was afterwards when I couldn't understand. At that time, I didn't really know what was happening. It was beyond me, you know. But later in life, I did wonder about it, that so many people welcomed Hitler with open arms.
He'd done so much, really, with armaments, building up occupations. He must have seemed a bit of a saviour at the time.
Well, I think, I've got my own thoughts on this, but I think he had done so much for Germany between 1933 and 1938. Germany in 1933 was economically bankrupt, really. Yes. He had done so much for them that I think possibly there were many Austrian people who thought that he would do the same for Austria. Austria wasn't quite in the same economic difficulty as Germany had been in 33, but nevertheless, the economy did need reviving, and I think the hope was that Hitler coming into Austria would do the same for Austria as he had done for Germany. Well, life in Vienna changed completely for me in 1938, because at that time the school I went to was closed by Hitler because it was a convent school, and all my friends went to a different school in Vienna, and I was sent to a Jewish school. So I found out for the first time that I was different to the rest of my friends, and I had to go to school on my own wearing the Star of David, yellow Star of David, and the journeys to school were very unpleasant. People would call you names and throw things at you, and it was quite a hard time for me. And I think my grandmother realized then that I could be in danger, because she was my guardian. And at that time, though, there was no thought of my coming, leaving the country, because it wasn't so important then. And it was when Kristallnacht occurred, which I remember very, very vividly, because it was the night before my 12th birthday that Kristallnacht occurred. And it was after that my father disappeared, and it was then that my grandmother became really worried about my safety, my security.
Your father was Jewish then?
My father was Jewish. I was what was called a Mischling. Mischling meaning a mixture of half Christian, half Jewish. Although the meaning that the Germans put on the word Mischling is quite different. It doesn't just mean a mixture. They meant it like being a mongrel, which is a very unpleasant thought.
Yes. Tell everyone what happened to your father and your mother.
Well, my mother died when I was only 8.5 years old, and that's when my grandmother took charge of me, and she was the maternal grandmother. My father lived in Vienna, and after I went into a convent school as a weekly boarder, he came every weekend. When I went to my grandmother's house, he also came to see me and see my grandmother. But after Kristallnacht, there was nothing. And I remember it was after the war that my grandmother told me she went to his office and it had been ransacked. And she went to his flat, and there was no sign of him. And she asked around and nobody knew what had happened to him. So at that stage, that's when she really became so concerned for my welfare.
Just to explain Kristallnacht to everyone, could you hear anything on? Were you right deep in the city listening to all of that going on?
Yes.
It was a night of systematic horror.
It was.
Synagogues burning, shops being looted.
All we could hear was screaming, crashing of glass, even some shots. And the nuns were very concerned. In Vienna, there were shutters on the windows. They closed all the shutters immediately and to try and deaden the sound of outside, but it was still penetrating. It was crashing of glass, people crying, people screaming. It was a dreadful night, and I don't think I could ever forget it in my life. Mm. It was so, so vivid. And I think the fact that it was the night before my 12th birthday brought it home even more to me. The next day, I really couldn't celebrate my birthday as I would have done as a child, you know.
Did the nuns try to hide you? Did they realize there was a danger for you at that point?
No, they didn't. Because they had no idea that I was a Mischling.
Oh, right.
I was just...
An ordinary pupil. Yes.
My grandmother was a Christian, so I don't suppose it ever occurred to any of the nuns to think that I was half Jewish. And I never really thought about it until Hitler came. Well, they would know I was Jewish because I was actually picked out and sent to another school. But they didn't try to hide me, no. They would know by that time that I was Jewish, yes, of course.
So what did they decide to do to make sure that you were safe?
I really don't know how my grandmother found out about the Kindertransport, but after Kristallnacht, the rest of the world became aware of the danger that children in countries overrun by Germany were in. And it was an organization, initially it was the Quakers, the Society of Friends, who were very concerned about children's safety. And they in turn got together with the Catholic Church, the Anglican Church, and other organizations, and decided that there would be, if the country allowed it, if the government allowed it, they would bring unaccompanied children into England to make sure that they were safe.
I can't even begin to appreciate what it was like for you as a 12-year-old child, leaving your family behind you to board a train for an unknown destination. How much do you recall about the day that you actually boarded that train?
I recall that day extremely well. We were asked to meet at the station at midnight, and that was very strange time, we thought. But nevertheless, my grandmother and my great-aunt and my aunt accompanied me to the station on that night. I think we must have got there around about 11 o'clock, and the station platform was crowded. And mingling among the people, the grown-ups, were people in black uniforms who had clipboards and papers, and they obviously had lists of children who were going to be put on the train. And we were allowed to go on the platform with our parents, but they were only allowed to stay on the platform. We eventually had to get on the train. Later I heard that they were told there had to be no emotional scenes, but there were young children, as young as 3-year-old. Mm. It was from 3 to 17, the Kindertransport. But the younger children, the 3, 4, and 5-year-olds had to have older siblings with them, otherwise they weren't allowed on. And each child was allowed to have a suitcase or a big bag, a soft toy, and we all had to have labels round our neck with our name and number on. It was a very strange feeling. I was very frightened. And even now, when I speak about it, I get very emotional because I remember how frightened I was and how I didn't want to leave my grandmother. But when the signal came to get on the train, we had to get on, and the windows were closed, the doors were closed, and we were shut off from our families.
Can you remember her last advice to you, or her last words?
I think she said, write to me and let me know that you got there safely. Because actually, later on, I found in my case there was a writing pad and envelopes and a pen, which wasn't supposed to be in the case, because the case was only supposed to hold clothes. That's all we were allowed to bring. But she had the foresight to put writing material into my case. Now, if I remember rightly, I think she said, write to me when you get there.
I've chosen a very comforting piece of music for you here, Gay, at this point, while you collect your thoughts. And to those of you who are listening in, if you find the words of this next hymn a help, do look up some very similar words in the book of Isaiah, chapters 41 and chapter 43, and also Matthew 5:11. The song is Be Not Afraid, sung here by Michael John Talbot.
You shall cross the barren desert, but you shall not die of thirst. You shall wander far in safety, though you do not know the way. You shall speak your words in foreign lands, and all will understand. You shall see the face of God and
Did you find that the older children comforted the younger ones on the train?
Yes, very much so. I was on my own, being an only child. I didn't have any siblings. But the older children did comfort them, the younger ones, because the younger ones were very tearful and the journey was very, very long. It was a very long journey and it stopped. The train stopped several times to let the Gestapo get off and new ones get on, and they would come through the train and look at our labels and look at their lists to make sure that everything was in order. And this went on until we reached the Dutch border, which was possibly about 10 hours after we had left Vienna. And there we were received by the Dutch. They were expecting the Kindertransport because it was the town where every Kindertransport had crossed the border from Germany into Holland at the same place. So they were prepared, and they had prepared eats and drinks, and they came on the train and allowed us to get off onto the platform, and they comforted the younger children who were very distressed by that time. I can't remember how I felt then. I was just bewildered, I think.
I know that we will all want to hear how your journey moved on from there in Holland, Gay, but I'm afraid we've run out of time today, so we'll have to wait until part two next Sunday. But we've so much appreciated what you've already told us of your journey so far as a very frightened child refugee. Gay, would you like to choose a song or a hymn to close our programme today?
Could I choose I Watch the Sunrise? Because that is one of my favourite hymns. I love the chorus, which says, "But you're always close to me as I'm close to you." And I think of that as being God close to me, but not only God, but also all the loved ones who've come before me are always close to me.
Thank you so much, Gay.
I watch the sunrise lighting the sky, casting its shadows near. And on this morning, bright though it be, I feel those shadows near me.
The sunset.
kingdom or